All right, everybody, welcome to the Almani Guys podcast, episode 3. We've got a big show for you guys tonight. My name is Kirk, and I'm here joined by Chow. What's going on, Chow?
Hey, everyone. How's everyone doing?
All right. And also, Tom is back. What's up, Tom?
Hey, I'm back.
All right. And then we got Danny.
What's How's up, Danny? How's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Hey, Danny.
Good.
Welcome to the podcast.
Danny is subbing in for... Well, actually, no. Tom is subbing in for Spencer again. I don't know what happened to Spencer. And Danny's our special guest.
Special guest, by which he means just some guy.
Just some guy we know, you know. From Almani, obviously.
Obviously. So,
we got a big show, like I said. We got the Almani Centennial coming up. We're going to be talking about that. Talking about New York Marathon. We got some laptop reviews. And Tom is going to give a special board game talk on the game King of Tokyo. I'm excited. We're going to talk some tech at the very end by popular demand. We're all going to keep this under 30 minutes, hopefully.
All yeah, right. 30 minutes, for sure.
Yeah, we say that every time.
Do it.
We're going to do it for once. All right, you guys ready? And go. All right, Almani Incorporation Centennial. What's happening? What's going on with this, Chow?
Okay, so this is a once-in-a-lifetime event for all you residents of Almani. 100 years celebration is going to be kicking off the weekend of November 17th and 18th. The actual centennial is the 18th, but the city decided to do it on a Saturday just to get the maximum amount of people over at the Civic Center. There's going to be a lot of things there, a lot of giveaways, contests, prizes, food, lots of food trucks as well. And there's a bunch of cool commemorative items as well that you can get, that you can order, shirts, pins, hats. So it's really cool. I definitely will be checking it out to see, getting my grub on, getting whatever free stuff I can get. And I definitely, recommend everyone that's a resident of Almani to stop on by because it's gonna be a good part. It's gonna be a good time.
All right, Danny, are you gonna go?
I'm probably not gonna go, but it's pretty cool that Almani's 100 years old now. That's kind of crazy to.
Oh, it's the first centennial.
Well, I believe so, right?
No, it's 100 years since it got incorporated into California or into Los Angelis.
Yeah, it's been a city before, right?
Well, it's been a city since like 1849. During the gold rush time, 1849, right?
And we got lions, yo.
Yeah, we got
lions. There's a video out there with like the lions that used to be there, the source of South Almani or Almani's mascot. And you can check that out probably on the Almani subreddit if you want to see that.
Go ahead and plug it. What is it?
r/Almani, just one word. If you want to check it out there. And it should be fun.
Don't worry, we'll put this in the show notes. Don't worry.
Chad's doing it right now. I can see
I can hear him typing it in as we speak.
Tom, you live in Almani. Well, are you going to hit it up?
Well, most likely. I mean, it's pretty cool. Once in a lifetime event, depending on what kind of food trucks are there. Definitely to try to figure out, if it works into my schedule and whatnot.
Right on.
Sounds pretty cool.
Very good, very good. Oh, yeah, can you also put a link to all the swag that you can get, Chow?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to put that in too. I'm sure even if you can't make it or you don't want to go, you could order some of these trinkets. They're not too expensive. They range anywhere between $1 to like $35. So if you're cheap.
I Heart Almani.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Get a button for a buck. Get a pen for a buck. So it's a good way to get back to the community a little bit and get a little memento. Yeah.
Chow's a salesman.
Look at that. Investing in Almani, guys.
Well, yeah. In like reading the Wikipedia for Almani in preparation for this podcast, apparently Almani is at 117,000 people now because of the last census that went on in 2010. Wow. So that's a lot of people in one city.
It is a lot, actually. Holy crap. I remember we had like, 11,000? No, wait, was that ever a thing?
I remember maybe like 10 years ago, it was about 100,000. We just broke 100,000.
Oh, yeah.
So now, yeah.
There's a lot of us in there. crowded in the place.
And the majority of it are all Hispanics.
Well, obviously.
It's like 70% is Hispanics.
Demograph.
Is it? I thought it was 50-50 Asian Hispanic.
No, I don't believe
well,
that.
Well, like some people, you know, mark like white and Hispanic because, you know, they want to look fancy. So all the percentages obviously don't add up to just 100%. They go over.
Ethnicity. Fun with ethnicity.
Yep, pretty much.
All cool. Right. The next thing we got. Okay, the New York Marathon was canceled this year. Is this true? Because of Sandy or what happened?
Yeah, there was a big controversy because of the hurricane, mm-hmm. because of all the damage and a lot of people still lacking power, electricity, and electricity.
Right.
There was a lot of outrage that the city would put resources toward a recreational event, I guess an athletic event, rather than putting that money and effort and food and supplies toward people that were pretty much displaced or, you know, are really struggling to get by.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, the original idea was that they would, you know, try to make up for all the money they lost because of the hurricane, but it's too soon. They can't do it.
Mm-hmm. It's too soon, yeah.
Would you run it, Danny, if... would you ever run a marathon, actually?
I'd be willing to try, at least. That requires a lot of training. I've had some friends who run in the ones around here in Los Angeles, which happen... I mean, there's at least four a year, I would say, that I know about. And then for different causes, sometimes they're donations for some sickness. But yeah, they seem like they're a lot of fun. A lot of people talk about great sense of satisfaction with that.
Yeah, how many? It's like 26.2 or something? 26.2 miles?
Yeah, I think it's so. Really
long. Oh my goodness, that's a lot of miles.
So that many.
That's why you start with the 5Ks, right? Work your way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go 5K, 10K, 15K.
Is it worth paying, because you gotta, there's an, you know, entrance fee and all that. Is it worth paying to run a 5K? I mean, really?
Well, obviously it's cheaper, right?
It's cheaper. It's like $30, I guess. So, you know, if you want to just get your feet wet, you get a T-shirt. I think you get some food and drinks as well. So
yeah, and also
the money is mostly just like your commitment. It's not really the money. It's more of like, I put money down, I'm gonna do this, because $5 down, you're just
going to
skip it, right?
Yeah, and also some people do it for the swag, you know, like New York Marathon, you know, swag, you know, it's only once a year, right?
Right.
So they kind of collect it, kind of like pins or other.
Keep in mind that also it's not just a single money entrance fee or anything like that. Like some people, marathons sometimes are a bit different where, you know, you go around and you're like, hey, donate this money toward whatever the cause is or whatever the marathon is, and I'll run a mile for like the quarter or whatever. I have a friend who does this thing called Team in Training, and he, you know, bakes cookies. It's really cool. He sells them at work, does things like that, and it all goes to the research for a certain disease. So he's probably not paying anything, but he's able to participate in these athletic competitions and help out a good cause.
Yeah, that's really cool.
If you get fast enough, you can actually, you know, get medals and whatnot.
Nice.
Disneyland Marathon gives out pretty cool swag. I've seen the medal that they give out. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, definitely. People also go to Disneyland for pins, too, so it's not just limited to that.
And they dress up. Like, the Tinkerbell Half Marathon, like, it's mainly catered toward females. And they're
some
wearing
dudes.
Their wings. Yeah, you get the dudes, too.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, Chow, you want to do the next topic?
Sure. Okay, so we're going to be doing a couple of reviews here. We're going to start off with XCOM, Enemy Unknown. I believe this is the title for the PC, Xbox, and also the PlayStation 3. Tom, I heard that you've been playing it, right?
Yeah, I heard about this fairly recently, and it got really good reviews. So what the backstory is that XCOM used to be... it's an old game from, you know, 1994. It was first released, you know, for DOS, Amiga, for PlayStation, for Windows, right? And what XCOM is just a turn-based strategy game that you can play. And it's generally about, you know, alien invasion. And you take control of a response force, and you have to, you know, basically do all these missions and try to repel the alien threat. It's pretty interesting. You know, just like Final Fantasy Tactics or, you know, Tactics Ogre. And I don't know, just really fun. You definitely get that symptom where you play Civilization where you're like, well, I'll just do one more mission. I'll just do one more turn. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's 5 a.m. and you got to go to bed. So nice. It's
Tom, what platform are you playing on?
I'm playing on my MacBook Pro. I just booted into Windows 7 and I just played on there. Works great. What's also interesting about the game is that you can recruit people into your squad, but if they die in missions, they die forever. So
hardcore.
Yeah, so it's pretty hardcore, and you know, you build up all these characters for so long, and then they just die. It's not good. There's actually a mode you can play where you can't. There's just one save. So if your guy dies and you make a bad decision, then that guy's dead forever. You can't reload the save. But no, I'm not that hardcore, so I just play the normal mode. So you're constantly reloading a last save because, you know.
Yeah. That's what I did in Mass Effect. Who would play with that? That's, oh my God. I mean, commendations to those of you out there who would do that, but I mean, I hated losing people that you could buy in Final Fantasy Tactics, you know?
Right. It's just,
so I try to save Ares, you know, from 7, but I couldn't get around it. I got beaten.
You just stopped, you just quit. You're like,
I quit. I didn't want to see the end. Forget it.
Yeah, it definitely ups the stakes when you can't just, you know, reset your your save file and just begin over again, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, core mode definitely for the hardcore type.
Definitely. All right, Chow, I heard you got a new computer. How is it?
Yes, I know, I've been talking about it for the last couple of podcasts. It finally came in this past Friday. I set it up yesterday, so I'm pretty much up and running today, especially for this podcast. I picked up the Lenovo IdeaPad Y580 from the Lenovo website. So it's running in about, it's a little more than $1,000 retail price. And it's definitely a strong performer if you're looking for a desktop replacement, something that could play games, watch movies, you know, go online, do data processing, do like video editing, that. Then it's going to be a good choice for you. You know, the only thing I would say that is kind of negative about it, it is bigger than your typical, you know, your Ultrabooks and your, you know, something maybe like a MacBook Pro or even like the BIOS. It's going, I think it's about 6.5 pounds, so it's a little heavier, but you know, when you're looking for power, 1080p display, 8 gigs of RAM, got a i7 processor, and also comes with a solid state drive too for Windows.
How big?
So it's packing a lot of performance in it. So
how big is the drive?
The drive is the 1 terabyte drive. So lots of space.
No, the solid state one.
Oh, the solid state is a small solid state. It's only a 32 gig, so that's just enough for the Windows installation.
Okay,
but it boots up in like 30 seconds, so it boots up really fast.
Nice, nice. Danny, so, I heard you're also looking for an idea or a laptop. Is that true?
It's something that's on the back of my mind. Yeah, see about it if because I've been wanting to work remotely a bit more. So I've been looking out, and I was really, one thing I want to ask Chow is, you know, that sounds like a solid beast, but what's the battery life like?
The battery life, I haven't really tested out the battery life because, like I said, it's mostly a desktop system for me. Based on the benchmarks that I've seen, you're looking at about 4 hours of battery life off the AC adapter. So that's not bad. It's not amazing, but if you're going to be not plugged in for a couple hours, you're good to go. I probably wouldn't recommend watching Blu-rays, but if you want to just do internet stuff and word processing.
Does it have a Blu-ray player on there? Maybe watch.
Yeah, it does have a Blu-ray. I was going to talk about this in a separate topic, but I was watching Avengers earlier on Blu-ray on the system. Watched for about maybe 30 minutes. It's really clear. The screen, you can't really see any like artifacting or anything like that. So if you like to watch movies on the go, especially high-def movies, this could be a good companion if you try to travel because you don't have to carry like a separate player or watch it on the iPad or something.
Very nice. Sounds like a stark contrast to something like the Chromebook, which is really light. And that's kind of the option that I've been looking more toward as I use my tablet a bit more. Everything is online more. You know, that's kind of what I'm measuring it up against. Although the Chromebook, what I really want from something like that is the same concern that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I probably would recommend this for someone that travels a lot because of the weight, and then it does generate a little more heat because of the graphics card. It does have dedicated graphics as well. It's the, I think it's the GeForce 660X. So
that's pretty good,
it's
right?
It's definitely more of a desktop replacement. You can move it around, but if you already have a good desktop, probably wouldn't recommend this because you're happy with the size or the weight or the heat. So
good
more
know.
Of a desktop replacement than like a MacBook, a Pro.
Definitely
like
sounds solid.
So the IdeaPad versus the ThinkPad. I always thought the ThinkPad was like the higher tier, and the IdeaPad. You know, like back in the days when Apple had the MacBook Pro and the MacBook, I always compared the MacBook to the IdeaPad and MacBook Pro to the ThinkPad. Is that incorrect?
Lenovo kind of changed up the branding. Uh-huh. ThinkPad is more of their professional line. That's more for business use. It's a lot more durable. The materials are just higher quality. It's more of a tank like quality, so if you're in the field,
like then military it's grade kind of.
Yeah, it's not really meant to be playing games. Like you could play like you know mid end games, like right. maybe I don't know, I'm not sure, like maybe something like something from like 2009, like I don't know, The Witcher or something. So you could probably play like titles from a couple years ago pretty well, but it's not really the purpose of the machine. The purpose of the machine is to get work done, battery life and durability.
All right, that's cool. Very cool, very cool. So speaking of Avengers, you got it or what?
Yeah, I did. I picked it up a while ago. I just was able to watch it just today. I just been busy. So I haven't really got to the extras yet, but the video quality is really good. The movie, it probably doesn't hold up as well because the movie just starts up really slow and you know what happens. So I was really tempted to just jump around to the action scene. But from what I've seen so far, it's definitely worth a pickup. I got it on Amazon for $20. And it's a four-disc set. It's you get the Blu-ray, you get the 3D version, you get a DVD, and a digital copy. And also the music soundtrack. So you get a bunch of stuff for $20. So if you're a fan of Avengers or you just like to show off your cinema system, for $20, it's a good pickup.
That's pretty good. Go ahead.
Yeah, you should definitely watch the short film that's on the Avengers disc. It's actually really good. And you know how they're doing a S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series?
Yes.
And, you know, if it's in the vein of, you know, the short that you find on the Avengers, then the TV show is definitely looking good.
Very nice. In the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, the guy that recruited all the Avengers, what was his
Agent
name?
Coulson.
Coulson,
yeah,
he's in it, right?
Yeah, he's gonna be in it. They haven't really talked about how they're gonna bring him back, you know, from spoilers, dead. And I don't know, but Joss Whedon does this a lot with a lot of his characters. He'll bring these guys back in a different context, you know, and give them a pretty crazy story or interesting story. So it'll be interesting to see how he. You know, incorporates Agent Coulson into the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series because, you know, Joss Whedon, he's been doing television for a long time.
Oh, so Joss Whedon is doing this TV series too?
Yeah, he's executive producing it, so always good.
Hmm. Very nice.
Of course, I'm pretty sure he's going to direct at least the pilot episode.
I hope so.
If they want it to succeed, he'll have to do that.
Yes.
You know, I didn't really get into Dollhouse. Like, I know that's Joss Whedon. I mean, especially in the beginning.
Right.
I didn't really get it. Like, first season was kind of bleh. And then second season got pretty good. And then it got really dark. Like, really fast.
Right. Dollhouse had an interesting world, interesting mythology. But I wouldn't say it was as strong as some of his other TV series, like Buffy or Angel.
Firefly? Anybody?
Definitely not Firefly. Firefly is probably, I don't know. Just because, I don't think it's because it was so short and people, you know, if it's so short, then it doesn't have a chance to get bad, right? But Firefly
was
just really well written, and the movie itself was actually really good. So,
Serenity, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, very cool. Speaking of another DVD, I just want to plug this real quick. I was just watching Scott Pilgrim versus the versus the World. If you guys haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. I got the Blu-ray, like, used, because I like to buy used DVDs and Blu-rays. And I got it for, like, $12 on Amazon. And then it's really good quality. So I highly recommend it. They sell
used Blu-rays on Amazon?
Like from other sellers, I guess.
I don't know. I was like, what the hell did Amazon sell during used stuff? That's kinda...
Well, I don't know. It did have Amazon Prime attached to it, so I got it in like 2 days. So
it's probably like a verified seller.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, used items are great to buy, or yeah, just items are sometimes better to buy used.
Yeah, like CDs, DVDs. Come on,
games are the ones that games, I was gonna pitch in here. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Not PC games, right?
Wait, why not?
Haven't tried that one, but...
Because CD keys, you can only use them one time.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Well, quickly, since we're already talking about entertainment, I just saw Wreck-It Ralph. Highly recommend it. Go watch it. If you like video games, the 80s, you should watch it. A lot of
references.
Yeah, it's very Pixar-esque. It's not by Pixar, it's by Disney Animation Studio, but definitely the guy who's in charge of Pixar, John Lasseter, executive, produced this movie as well. So the story is really strong. It's also like Pixar in that the story, you know, is for kids, but there's also a lot of things for, you know, older people, adults as well. So definitely go watch it. Highly recommend it.
Very cool.
Good to know.
All right, let's move it along. I guess we're... taking a while, but board game talk with Tom.
Ooh,
what's going
finally,
on? King of Tokyo.
Been a long time coming.
Yes.
Finally.
All right, so I wanted to bring you guys a really easy to learn and fun to play board game for what I would say called beginners, right? And it's called King of Tokyo. And it's the scenario is kind of like Rampage. You guys remember Rampage from the NES days?
Yeah, where
a bunch of monsters just show up in a city, just start wrecking things, right?
Yeah.
So every player plays one of those monsters. So you know, you have the giant ape, you have the dinosaur, you have like a bunny and a giant mech. So all of these monsters are converging on Tokyo, and they want to be king of Tokyo. And there's two ways to win: either you get 20 points, 20 victory points before anybody else does, or you kill everybody else. So And how you play the game is you play by dice rolls. And the dice rolls is kind of like Yahtzee. So you roll the dice, and you can keep whichever results you want, and you can re-roll the rest. And you can re-roll them up to twice. And the results you get from the dice let you do damage, heal yourself, get energy, and just get straight victory points. And what's interesting about this game is that there's a fun dynamic in the dice rolls because, you know, each turn, you're aiming for something different. Maybe on your first roll, you get a bunch of points, so you want to just keep those points. But you can also attack other monsters and also gain energy. So there's a lot of strategy involved. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about gaining energy is that you can use it to buy cards that are kind of like mutations. And you can get mutations kind of... and these cards are... The art is just really good. And... you can get cards like, you know, you can get a power like grow an extra head, or, you know, you can be a metamorph, or you can get even bigger. And all of these different cards are really well drawn. They have interesting powers that impact how the rest of the game goes. So it's really interesting. It's really fun. You can play in about half an hour really quick. And, you know, it's just really fun because the artwork is so good. And who doesn't love, you know, destroying things?
Right. Very nice.
Play on destruction.
Sweet. Where can we get this?
Right now, actually, I've been trying to get it, and it's actually out of print because the first print sold out. So I'm just waiting for the second print. The price is usually about from $30 to about $40, depending on if they want to charge you tax and shipping and whatnot. It could even go up to $50. But, you know, all the parts are really high quality. Artwork, as I said, you know, twice already, is really good. And the quality is just really good. So it's definitely worth the price. And also, the expansion is going to come out soon, and a panda monster.
Oh. Very cool.
So Tom, I just had a quick question. For the game, how would you recommend this game to someone that really is not experienced with playing board games? Like, if I just picked it up right now, would I be able to figure out how to play and how to have fun?
Yeah, it's really simple, which is kind of why I chose the game to feature first. You know, you're just rolling dice, and you know the Yahtzee part is just really easy to teach. You know, you like you can keep these and you reroll these, and you can reroll if you want. And you know, it doesn't really matter. I know that people's kids, you know, from like 5 ages and up, you know, understand this game, pick it up really quick, and they have a lot of fun with it. And you can even, you know, win at this game, even though, you know, you're not that old.
Confession bear. I've never played Yahtzee. I don't even know what that is. That's like some, I don't know, some Jewish game or what?
Yahtzee's very similar. You know, you roll excited dice, keep certain results, you can reroll the rest. So that's the mechanic they took and made and built a monster game around it.
Ah, interesting. Very cool. Okay, why would you recommend, because I know you're into board games a lot, and then when we were like in high school, we played a lot of card games. Now, like what made the switch for you, and what are the advantages/disadvantages?
Okay. Primarily, the biggest advantage of playing, you know, that game is that you just buy the game. Whereas with other card games like, you know, Pokemon or Magic, everybody has to bring their own deck, and a lot of it, you know, however much money you put into your deck, that's how strong your deck is. However, with a board game, everything's set, everything's usually pretty balanced. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you know you buy two copies of the game. It's not going to, you know, impact, you know, your side of the game. It's not going to make it unfair for the other player. I just think that board games often allow more interesting mechanics. It's not just, you know, there's a lot of co-op games that I play. There's a lot of like one person versus everybody else type games. So, you know, it changes up the mechanic a lot, and just fun. And everybody, you know, buy a different board game. You have all different types of games to choose from.
I see. Okay, going beyond board games, I guess, would be something like D&D, right? Where there's really no board involved, right, and it's just like free as your imagination. Danny, you played D&D, right? Or a little bit of it?
Me? Yeah, I do play D&D. And it's all pure imagination. The Dungeon Master, or at least what I see as really valuable in D&D, is that the Dungeon Master basically tells a story. So the events of the game roll out with regards to what he or she sets up for you and for your characters, whatever's happening with your party. So it's pretty cool because that opens up the avenues of, hey, maybe I can change this mechanic or have it affect people in interesting ways that really plays directly into the made-up story they have for their character, as opposed to just, okay, you know, here are the mechanics and you abide by them. Both of them are fun, of course. It's just a very different scope.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried D&D, Tom?
Yeah, I did once or twice. And yeah, the problem for me with D&D is that the accessibility is kind of low.
Definitely agree with that. I want to write a piece sometime, although I worry that I'm going to have to hand in my dork or nerd card because it is all about how D&D is one of the worst games I've ever played.
Whoa. Whoa.
It's because there's a lot of sitting around. I enjoy games where, you know, the turns are kind of snappy. They kind of go really quick, so there's not that much downtime. The next game that I want to talk about probably next time I'm on is kind of addresses that issue. In D&D, you know, everybody has to take their turn. Everybody has to kind of role play that turn, so they have to all decide.
True.
And so it can get bogged down pretty quickly, and it does take a long time. Whereas, you know, with a board game, it's more of a set format, you know, and there are definitely a lot of visual aids for you to, you know, kind of anchor yourself to. Whereas with D&D, everything is kind of pulling out of the nether, so to speak. You know, you're kind of creating the world in your head. And what you're envisioning, what other people are envisioning, are not necessarily the same thing.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's definitely more hardcore. And I don't know. I like something that has like really nice, you know, artwork or really gorgeous, you know, pieces that I can, you know, it's more tactile for me.
Right.
Yeah. that King of Tokyo sounds
pretty good. Definitely want to check it out if you bust it out. I'll definitely want to play.
Yeah, nice.
When are you getting it, Tom?
Well, ratings now too.
What? Sorry, say again.
Are we doing ratings now too?
Ratings.
Yeah.
Okay.
If so, I give it 5 energies out of 5.
The only ratings I have is get it or don't get it.
I meant to say, when are you getting it?
Oh, whenever they do a second printing.
Ah, very nice. All right, let's move it all along. Anything else before we go on to the dreaded tech talk?
I think that's pretty much it in terms of that topic.
Yeah. By the way, my cat got fleas, and I've been trying to get rid of the fleas, so I bought this some sort of pesticide powder that you put on your carpet all over my room, and the fumes are very intoxicating, and I'm sitting here just breathing it in this whole time.
That's good to know, man. That's good to know.
It's like a potent lemon flavor. It's ridiculous.
We'll make sure to look for a new moderator after this.
Yes,
after
please.
This time.
Take over.
Toxicity.
All right, I guess we got to move on to the tech section. All right, lots of Google
Everyone's
news.
Favorite, yeah.
Oh, no, all the hate mail. All right, lots of Google news happened, even though Sandy happened and canceled the Google Playground.
Google's that good. They don't stop for disasters.
Oh, they should have done like a hangout, like an emergency hangout kind of thing. Everybody come on and watch, you know? I think that would have been cool.
On YouTube.
I would enjoy that. That seems like a really fun idea.
Yeah, but whatever. All right, so we got a couple of devices announced. We got the Nexus 4, the new Nexus 7 with, 3G or whatever. You know?
3G, 32 gigs.
The Nexus 10, very exciting stuff. And then some software. We got Android 4.2 Jelly Bean and the new Android keyboard that's a lot like the Swipe.
Kind of like Swipe meets SwiftKey.
All right, let's start in the beginning. Nexus 4, what's going on there? Tom, your thoughts.
Oh, me first, huh? Well, here's my gripe. If I told you that there was that had no LTE, had a glass glass on the back, no removable battery, no SD card, you would have told me that was the iPhone 4S. But now that Google's releasing that phone today to you a year after the 4S. So, I don't know. It's really interesting. I find it personally kind of funny, but it's a good value.
But is the iPhone 4S $300 unlocked?
That's true. See,
it is not $300 unlocked. How much is it, Tom? It's like $600, right, for the 4S right now?
Yeah, definitely. The price is really good if you're going to go unlocked. Unfortunately, you can only go one of two carriers, maybe. I'm not even sure.
T-Mobile and AT&T.
Pretty much those towers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not exactly a flagship phone. You know, something that people wait a year for. If you had the Galaxy Nexus last year, then you might want to just keep it.
Skip a generation.
You're gonna get 4.2 next month. So what's the urgency, right?
Yeah, it's all about software, anyways, guys.
Yes. All right.
Now I want Danny's perspective.
My perspective of the Nexus 4. I actually agree a lot with Tom. You know, it's basically
what's
like
going on. Like, did not plan for this.
It's basically, you know, an iPhone equivalent, an iPhone 4S equivalent, and really it opens up the choices. Like you guys said, the carriers now you have options with regards to what you get. So get a Nexus 4, roll up in Straight Talk, which I know you'll talk about next week, and yes. Hey, you've got a cheap iPhone equivalent, and you didn't have to kill your wallet. So, yeah, completely in agreement with Tom. They're the same.
Well, then, that cut the conversation short. Just kidding. All right, we got the ever-popular Nexus 7. Well, actually, Chao, I didn't ask you for your opinion.
There's two ways to think about the Nexus. There's two ways to think about the Nexus 4. One, in terms of like just raw horsepower, it does have a lot of hardware under it. You have an S4 Pro processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of onboard memory. So you have a lot of juice. So this phone's gonna last you a while in terms of being able to run applications, You're going to get timely updates. It's something that's not going to be running slow based on the videos I've seen. So it's definitely a good choice if you don't like skin products. You don't want to be in a locked ecosystem like, you know, Windows Phone or iOS. So it's definitely a good alternative to, you know, powerhouses like the One X and the GS3. So that's basically what Android's all about, right? You get choices, and if you don't like skin devices, you have the Nexus. You don't like the Nexus, you can go with something else. So I think for Google, it's all good. You know, they're gonna probably bust out LTE versions in the spring for CDMA carriers, maybe Sprint or Verizon. So it's not a big deal. I think it's definitely a good evolution of the Android ecosystem and the lineup that they have.
You know, here's what I think. I was really pumped for the Nexus 4, even thinking about getting it, but that glass back, really, I don't know anymore. I don't like glass backs. Because, I mean, if you drop it, then it's going to look gross.
Right. It's going to look like an iPhone that you drop, yeah.
I know, exactly. Everybody's iPhone, especially, I don't want to, like, say it's all the girls that I know with iPhones, but for some reason the majority of them have broken glass background and back glassing.
Well, what they do is that they get the phone, it's all awesome, and then they drop it, and then they buy the case after they drop it. So it's their own fault.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but this is another topic altogether, but going caseless, I think is the way to go, honestly. I mean, you're going to sacrifice your phone, maybe, if you drop it.
But Kirk, look, what happened with you? You had the original Evo, you dropped it, that was $100, right? So, what's the $20 case or the $100 deductible, right?
That was a one in a million drop.
That was pretty good.
Completely shattered everything.
Yeah, I remember the pictures. That was pretty good.
It was insane. I don't know how it dropped so perfectly flat on its face. Like, it didn't bounce.
I don't remember these pictures. You got to shoot it sometime. Put them in the notes, man.
Put it in the notes, yeah.
But that's like any other, you know, thing with glass, right? Because the glass is, you know, if you drop it, it's going to break. It might not break the first time. It might not break the second time. But
it's going to break. Eventually, it will break again.
It's glass. That's what glass does when you drop it.
It looks really nice, but it's not the strongest material.
What about more R&D into unbreakable glass? Like, I want them to make a Nokia, you know, the old Nokia phones, you know, like the one Tyrone had. I want a smartphone built like that.
But that wasn't glass, though. That was plastic.
I know. Well, can't they make a plastic glass hybrid of some sort?
Well, yeah, I think glass by definition has to be a certain way, rigid, chemically. And, you know, if you make it too plastic, it's not glass anymore.
In terms of durability, I have a story with my Zoom tablet. It's an Android tablet by Motorola that I got a couple of years ago at a game developers conference in San Francisco. And I was a little less than sober that night. And everyone's like, oh, my God, I want to see this tablet that you got for free from Google. That's amazing. That's cool. And then so I bring it out. And like I said, I'm a little not sober. So I drop it on concrete on a corner.
Oh, shoot.
Like this new device that I hadn't had before. And we're like, oh, man, that's it. But honestly, it's completely fine. It's been fine. And hopefully this is the direction that everyone goes to. Because, hey, if they can make tanks or planes with glass that doesn't break from flying into a bird, hey, maybe you can make glass.
Ballistic gorilla glass. That's what we need.
Yeah, man. Why not? I'm pretty sure that people out there would pay for it just to have that slimmer form rather than have to get a case.
Right. Well, I go caseless on my 4S, and I've actually dropped it on a couple of occasions, and they have not cracked. However, one of my friends, you know, Eddie, he's dropped his, and it's cracked. So it really depends. I mean, it's all about how it drops, where it hits, and
chaos.
It's really, you know, up to chance.
There's the lesson, guys. If you're going to drop your phone, drop it right.
That's true. Yeah. You're not dropping it right.
All right. The Nexus 7, let's move on. The Nexus 7 is getting a 4G HSPA Plus upgrade, I believe.
Yes, that is correct.
Enough said. All right, Nexus 10.
What do you think? What kind of value do you think that adds to the device, Kirk? Is that going to be something that's compelling, or Wi-Fi is the way to go?
You know what? I don't know. I think yeah, it would help because a lot of people I know do get the iPad with, you know, internet. I mean 3G. And I guess this is Google's answer to that.
Well, yeah, iPads now go on LTE as well. So a lot of people have said, you know, that that makes a dramatic difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of they can use it now anywhere and it's fast. And sometimes it's even faster than their networks at home.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Hey, Kirk, does your Nexus 7 with the Wi-Fi, does it come with the GPS with it?
Yeah, it does. Actually, so I could look up things. If I tether my phone, oh, by the way, on Straight Talk, tethering is free, so more on that later.
Yes.
Wait, did I lose somebody?
I don't know.
Oh, it looks like I dropped out right there. Sorry.
There you go. anyway, let's just move on. Nexus right. 10. This is something I'm really excited about.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah.
Wait. Hang on.
Tell me why.
Go back to the 7 for real quick. Okay. When they added the HSPA Plus, is it actually more of a pricier model, or is it they're just replacing the entire line, same price?
I think it's a little more. Let me go check on the Play Store. But
okay,
yeah, it's $299.
They got rid of the 8 gig model,
mm-hmm.
and then they added this model. So they dropped the price of the 16 gig to the 8 gig.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they just kind of shifted everything over, I guess.
By the way, Tom, you know, I'm an idiot, so I don't know what HSPA Plus means. Can you tell me what that gets me when it's added to a device?
HSPA Plus is just 3G modified, so that's a little bit faster. Certain areas, yeah, cool. Certain areas is actually really good. You can get almost LTE speeds. You know, you're talking, I think the max is 42 megabits per second, which is really nice. Fast.
So right. I can essentially connect with that device to the internet just as I could with 3G, but at faster speeds is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's basically like a beefed up, it's basically between 3G and like LTE. So right. It's about,
cool.
it's in between technology. It's good, like especially on T-Mobile. I've seen people get like double digit speeds.
Right. Nice. And that's what AT&T kind of got into trouble on, you know, the internet for when they switched all the signage from 3G to 4G on the iPhone because they were now on HSPA Plus, and theoretically they could get higher speeds, but you know, obviously networks are depending on where you live and where
you
are. Yeah,
you could also get like 1 meg. You can also get a 1 meg download. So it varies.
So it could be really slow. It could be really fast. LTE, on the other hand, is generally a lot faster if you're in the area. And the new chips that, at least I know, that Apple uses for the iPhone 5 are really low power. And iPhone 5s on LTE are actually get better battery life than if they have to go back on 3G.
Cool. So different connection types. Thank you for enlightening me.
Nice. All right.
So good, next 10.
Oh, yeah. We were going to talk about LTE, but somebody erased that from the show notes.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, we covered it. Anyway.
There it is.
Pretty much covered.
There it is, guys. Enough said. All right, moving on to the Nexus 10. All right, I'm actually excited for this. What's that?
I said, if you have any questions, send the hate mail.
Yeah, hate mail. I'm really excited for this because I normally don't like 10-inch like tablets because they're a little too big. I like the 7-inch, and it's like perfect to fit in one hand and all that. But man, the specs on this are super sweet. And so let me read you some of these specs. It has a 2560x1600 pixel resolution.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah. Smoking.
That's more. I mean, what's your laptop at, Chow? It's your brand new laptop.
The one I got, it's actually really impressive. It's what, 1920x1080. So that's, for me, that's already really good. So you're talking about what, like twice the amount of pixels, right?
Almost, yeah. Isn't that ridiculous? That's 300 like pixels per inch. More. What's that?
It's like something like 37% more pixels or something like that.
Oh my goodness. 300 pixels per inch. How much is the Retina, the first Retina screen at, Tom? Do you remember?
Yeah, it's double 1024x768. So the Nexus 10 has more pixels.
Man, this is insane.
Opportunity for sleekness. Opportunity. Let's see if it follows through.
It's pretty nice. It has NFC. Although NFC on a tablet, I don't really get. I just don't get it.
It's a really big credit card.
Oh,
yeah. Developers out there, man, you guys got to make some cool apps with NFC. You guys just...
I know, right?
We got to do that.
There you go. By the way, I tried Google Wallet again a couple of days ago at CVS. Failed again. It just... I put my phone on the thing, and it didn't initiate. I was like, hello? And then the cashier was like, you want to pay with cash? I'm like, yes, on my head. So, it's got the usual, going back to the Nexus 10, it's got the usual Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. It's got a front-facing camera and a back-facing camera. It's going to run Android 4.2. And it has a barometer. This is kind of interesting. I've heard that the Galaxy Nexus also has a barometer for some reason. Why? Yeah. Why?
No idea.
Just it's to calculate, like, help out with the weather, right?
Yeah,
for the lulls? Just doing a checklist, checking out the checklist. A barometer, why not? Put that
for the
on
lulls.
There. Yeah, it would be like, you know, a spectrometer. Yeah, I'll go ahead and put that on there. We don't know it before, but put it on there.
Somebody will write an app for it, I'm sure.
If it doesn't cost anything extra to put it on, just throw it in there, right? What's it going to
do? Right. Happen?
And then make your spec list even longer.
Yep.
So Kirk, spec-wise, this thing looks like a beast, but why should I get this over an iPad?
Wait, hang on. Surface? Let me tell you the one thing that amazes me the most. It has a 9,000 milliamp lithium battery.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, 9,000, guys.
It goes over
9,000.
What?
Over 9,000.
Yeah, if they only made it 9,001, I would have been like, oh my gosh.
But Kirk, can I buy an extended battery for that thing? Can I buy an extended battery pack?
Oh, then it'll be over 9,000.
I'm pretty sure the battery is non-removable.
I meant like a battery pack, an actual physical battery pack.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they'll make those.
Maybe, yeah.
For the hardcore people.
Why should you get this over the iPad? I think it's first of all, the price. It's only $400 compared to the iPad that's $500, right?
That's good. $100, yeah. Anything else?
This is really for me, this is because I'm more of an Android ecosystem eater. So I would definitely get this over the iPad because I have nothing in iOS. You are brand new to the playground and you have no stock in anything, then it's just a price point kind of thing. And plus, I don't know, that screen, man. That's a
ridiculous
screen.
That screen sounds amazing.
And the barometer, guys. Come on. Does iPad have a barometer, Tom?
Right. Hey, well, go ahead, Danny.
I was going to say, May, my fiance, she has a 3DS. And they're making a ton of, there are these apps on there, or just these games that you can install or download, whatever. One is kind of like Pokemon, but it's an augmented reality sort of game where you look around and you capture or you shoot things. So she's like walking through the house one time, like looking for these things. So, hey, maybe they're already doing Pokemon that show up in the daytime or the nighttime. Why not go with Pokemon that show up with the barometer detecting rain, you know, or humidity?
Oh my goodness.
That'd be so extreme.
Well, the thing with that is you can just pull it off from like the weather app, right? They don't necessarily
that's
need
right.
something.
This
you
is
know,
true.
That's true.
You're not going to have to throw your tablet in somewhere where you can lower the pressure so you can catch the foam.
Oh, very true, very true. I don't know. I'm looking forward to this as some pretty sweet specs, but again, I mean, that's just judging off what's on paper. How it behaves in real life is, you know, up
right.
to somebody
could be,
who
could
has
be something
one.
Totally different, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. They've done some benchmarks for the Nexus 10 graphics chip in comparison to the iPad. Well, now it's fourth generation iPad. And it certainly matches up to the iPad 2 and maybe the iPad 3, but the iPad 4... in terms of benchmarks, at least, really blow the Nexus 10 out of the water. It's like, I don't know, something like 70% better. So there's still some catching up to do in terms of that for Android. The Tegra 3, I don't think, is as good as whatever graphics chips they're putting into the iPad at the moment. My biggest issue with the screen at that resolution is what the iPad kind of went through when it went Retina was that the apps just looked terrible if they weren't optimized for the Retina display. You know, all the icons. You kind of run into that in some of the reviews that I watched. You know, the icons are fuzzy, or the text is fuzzy sometimes. The graphics definitely are fuzzy. So it's really definitely up to the developers to kind of step up their game and first deliver tablet-sized apps and, you know, stop with this whole, well, if I program it for the phone and it'll scale, it'll just be fine. I mean, you have all this extra space. You can do it. You can use it for a lot of other stuff. You don't need to, you know, just keep the same UI. And two, they'll need to retinize, you know, or make their graphics stand up on such a high resolution display. So as of right now, you know, it's a great device. The price point is good, but the apps just aren't there.
All right, Danny, would you get one?
I would, sure, but. To be honest, you know, maybe I take that back. Actually, I'm just so happy with my Zoom tablet that I don't really see a need
so
to
2000 and late.
It's honestly, yeah, it's old school, which is ridiculous to say in my mind, even as it leaves my mouth right now.
Right. Yeah, Danny, but you're still getting updates on your tablet, right? You're running what? You should be running 5.1 right now, right?
Right now, it's Ice Cream Sandwich that is on there. I don't. It's not connected. It was something that was given out in GDC. What's that?
CM mod. Put it on there, man.
Yeah, I could root it, but honestly, I was so fine. I was fine with Ice Cream Sandwich, and you know, it did get an update from Honeycomb before that. So I was already ecstatic. I was already like, okay, cool. Hey, it's actually receiving some support. Mm-hmm. If I get the update, that'll be cool. If not, that's fine too. But honestly, it does everything a tablet needs to do. If I were to get another device, it would probably be a Chromebook just because I want to try that out. I want to see how that works. And the tablets are just going to keep coming and coming. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, Amazon and Google and Apple are fighting that race, and even Apple, like, it's going to be an iteration machine, as we're seeing with the iPad mini, at least from, that's what I would guess. So it's going to just keep getting better and better and better. So I want to jump in maybe when they have a huge feature or a huge hardware addition that they're like, hey, this is completely new and we're the first ones to do it.
Yeah. Speaking of software, the last thing I want to talk about is Android 4.2. It looks pretty good. They've updated a lot of stuff with the cards that you get in the Google Now. The keyboard is now a built-in kind of swipe thing. So for people who do not like to sideload stuff, like Danny, I know you don't really trust unknown sources, I guess. Mm-hmm. So this is stock, and I guess you'll be happy with that.
Yeah, I'm not. When Kirk says unknown sources, that's things like the Amazon App Store or any other app store that people come up with to try to distribute their apps outside
now.
Google Play. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, but we are running out of time. Actually, we didn't make 30 minutes.
You guys don't want to talk about the last topic here, but you just touch about it.
Go, chow.
All right, I'm going to do a little soapbox here. Amazon and Google undermining mobile pricing article that we saw in Engadget. They posted this huge article over the weekend on Friday, just stating that Amazon with their Kindle and Google with their Nexus line, the 7 and the 10 and the 4, they're just kind of undercutting competition with the pricing. They're basically selling stuff at cost or barely above cost. And that's really hurting other OEMs like, you know, Acer, HTC, that don't have the ability to, like maybe someone like Dell, that don't have the ability to sell you stuff in a store through like a marketplace like Amazon Marketplace or, you know, Google Play Store. It's not all OEMs have the ability to sell you books and movies and TV shows. So you're not, you know, if I'm, let's say, Toshiba, how can I sell you something at profit, at cost, I'm not going to be able to make any money. My company's going to go out of business if I attempt to do that. I have to charge, you know, $500-$600 for my device. I can't sell it for $250 or $300. So there was a lot of negative feedback on that article. People were just like, well, this guy got bought out by Apple. He has Apple stock. He's an Apple lover. Why is he hyping up the iPad mini so much? You know, it wasn't a perfect article, but definitely interesting in that, you know, it pointed out that this industry is not really, it's not really fair. It's made for the heavy hitters. And if you can't compete, the government's not going to do anything about it. It's just too bad. So if someone could come out with a product at a good price, that's better for consumers, right?
Yeah, you know what? I did read the article, and I thought he had a point. Because in a way, like the Nexus tablets and the Amazon Kindle stuff, in a way, they are almost subsidized.
They are subsidized. They definitely are subsidized.
Yeah, because they're banking on the fact that we're going to, you know, eat into their ecosystem. And then that's where they're going to get their money back. But if you're like Toshiba, you don't have an ecosystem like that. You just have the tablet or whatever you're selling.
You sell a product. You sell a laptop. You sell
so you can't offer it for that low of a price point.
Kirk, when you bought the Nexus 7, it came with $25 of credit, right?
It did, yeah. I haven't used it up yet.
You haven't used it yet?
Do
you think something like that encourages you to make more purchases in the store, or is that something that's just a marketing ploy?
I'm not sure. I'm really cheap. Yeah, can it be both?
I'm really cheap.
I'm super stingy, so I don't really spend. I still have like $14 left or something. It's been months.
Always have to remember that the strong ecosystem allows other people to pay these big companies money to run advertisements. So just getting those eyeballs into your ecosystem, exactly as Kirk said, is a good strategy to go with. And to be honest, I'm one of the people who criticizes this piece. I didn't read it all the way, admittedly, because as soon as I started to, I was like, okay, this guy bought Apple stock and he's really mad because it went down from 700 high to less than $600 now. And so that was just my mentality. But honestly, no one complains about Steam for video games. Steam is a platform that lets you distribute video games. It's purely software.
There are so many sales on Steam.
It's like hugely popular. And other distribution platforms have come up, but you know they're not as big as Steam. And that's just the reality. If you find a good way to establish a strategy for your business, then if you do it before anyone else, you deserve what you were able to establish there. If you look at phones as like just the devices to get people onto that ecosystem, then that's what they are. And you did it first, and you're establishing that ecosystem.
Yeah, I don't agree. Steam, I don't think the prices for games are necessarily any cheaper. Maybe, you know, sometimes they have sales and whatnot, but in general...
Yeah, people are buying more games than they will ever use. Their libraries are filling up with games that they bought for a dollar. Like, that's being given away for pretty much free. And there's no problem. That's what I love about it. It's like, there shouldn't be a problem with that. They learned or they discovered a better way to distribute games. Let them reap the benefits.
I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit different because people can still make games and sell it on Steam and, you know, maybe make some profit if their game is good. However, manufacturers of, you know, hardware, all they have is hardware. You can only sell hardware. So if Google themselves is undercutting everybody else and basically lowering the price and making everyone feel like, well, a tablet at 10 inches should be $400, then how do other manufacturers, you know, all of their partners, all of these people that they make tablets with, how will they make money? How will they compete in the marketplace?
Get into partnerships with them. You've got Google TV coming out, Samsung, LG, all these manufacturers that are making hardware for these ecosystems.
Yeah, but,
join the party. They got it first. Let them have it.
Yeah, but they're not making any money doing so.
Yeah.
So how can they justify continuing these partnerships that they're not making any money?
I would say they're making some money. They're just not making as much as Google or Apple.
I don't think that's the issue. I think they're entering into these partnerships so that they can, you know, at least get their foot in the door and at least, you know, get some orders. But majority of their sales will have to come from profits. And if tablets are, you know, being sold at cost, then they're not making any money.
I guess I have a problem with that sentiment because I look at OEMs like HTC, and I despise the HTC experience. I hate the hardware. I mean, it's huge. It's great. I mean, it's great in terms of, like, on paper, they've got great specs, but the actual experience, and, you know, my brother's phone runs out so quickly, and he doesn't even know what he's doing with what they set him up. And right. So when I look at things like that, I'm like, you guys don't deserve that money. Like, I can get a stock Android phone, and it's so much better. So I look at that, it's like, okay, these guys are crying for something that they haven't been able to surpass, even when they have the partnerships with people like Google. And Apple just keeps it all to themselves. But, you know, even in those cases, no one's proven themselves in terms of saying we are serious about providing a valuable experience to our customers.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if you feel as if any OEMs actually create a good skin for Android. It seems like to me that you're kind of like a stock experience kind of guy.
Yeah, like some people really love Sense, some people really love TouchWiz, some people like Google Blur. So it's a matter of preference. You can look at the sales numbers. Way more people buy non-stock devices. There's it's a fraction of people that buy Nexus devices.
And that's the other half of the problem, because the reason they buy, or rather, not necessarily a problem in and of itself, but the reason that those devices are bought is because none of these devices matter unless they're tied to a carrier. And the carriers are the ones who are subsidizing those costs and, you know, letting people sell or selling those phones at basically the only acceptable price in the minds of consumers. But that is one of the most ill-priced services ever. I mean, no one is going to disagree that mobile carriers are where all our money is going. Right. The device is a one-time cost. I'm happy with paying a huge cost, to be honest, a huge price for one, but I don't think there should be conversations about prices until we get some freaking mobile service that
is
reasonably
the problem with
priced.
That sentiment is that, isn't it Google themselves that decided, hey, we want to get into the mobile business, so here's Android. You can do whatever you want with it. We're not going to do anything about it. And they basically, you know, sold out Android so they can get market share. And which they did, and now they do, but
yeah, they have,
well, at the cost.
Tom, the last worldwide figures, what they have like 75% of like mobile devices.
Right. How many
devices? That's crazy.
Right. And what percentage of that is stock Android? Right. And,
yeah. It's
and
1%.
So
maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I feel like there's kind of dug themselves a grave, right? In terms of Google, you know, they don't have any control over their platform. They have no leverage. So even if they wanted to, right, that's the symptom of the Nexus 4, because they couldn't put LTE on there without tying it to a carrier. But on the other hand, Apple did it. You know, they have three models for iPhone 5, but they have LTE, and they were able to get that kind of leverage. So it's kind of like a disconnect. You champion, you know, taking control back from the carriers. However, the operating system that you're championing is basically the one that got all of us into this mess in the first place.
Well, it gave all of the carriers, or not the carriers, the OEMs, the opportunity to have their own versions of Android, right? Which is exactly what you're saying, which is fine. I'm a person who's big on the value of choice as well, but I won't go with that argument, although I do really value that there's the choice of stock Android. In terms of something like the Apple ecosystem, however, like, you don't have those choices in terms of providing something for OEMs to jump in on. So
yeah, if you want an iPhone with a memory card or a removable battery, you don't have an option, right?
So I think they both are doing things that end up being a losing situation for certain parties, but I prefer the one that gives me choices. Even if companies get it wrong, because at least people can listen to our podcast or go look on the internet for how these experiences will roll out for them.
Yeah, but your biggest gripes about all these issues are solved by Apple's devices. So wouldn't it follow logically that you would go towards something that actually solves all these issues that you have with carriers?
I wouldn't say that not offering a chance for a solution means that there is no problem, which is what Apple does. It's they don't offer a chance for OEMs to jump on. They're doing everything themselves, you know, and it's just a different problem, but I wouldn't say that it resolves any of my gripes.
If it was perfect, I would have an iPod.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think we're over time here.
Yeah, we're
BlackBerry, baby. RIM.
BlackBerry.
Forever.
Next time. Can we talk about BlackBerry next week or no?
Yes.
We don't need to talk about BlackBerry ever.
And Windows 8.
Well, we talk about it, but we just bash on it.
No.
I like BlackBerry. Never used nice. It, but I like it in concept.
Root for the underdog. All right, folks. We are desperately over on time.
1 hour, 3 minutes.
Jeez, guys.
That's pretty good.
I blame Danny.
I agree.
He's
I'll happily take the blame.
Dang it, Dan. You're the one that's always complaining that our crap's too long, first of all.
I want you all to know that as we were talking, I was taking note of the time, so I was like, we're two-thirds through, guys.
I know.
Like, we got 5 minutes left, guys.
And then this discussion happened.
After we went over the 30 minutes, I'm like, okay, I'll jump on board with you guys.
All right.
Game over.
Well, anyways, that's another podcast. We recorded this at, what time is it right now? 11 p.m. on the West Coast, November 4th.
The best coast.
Yeah, that's right.
Danny,
join us,
you and me.
Join us every day. Or join us weekly on Sunday is when we record this. And then hopefully we'll have it up by midnight or so. Anyway, this is the El Monte Guys podcast because we're all from El Monte. And this is episode 3. My name is Kirk. I'm here with Chow, Tom, and Danny.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you guys another time.
Right.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.